the application and again forced onto the street. The council's own assessment has determined that the car parking layout in the basement is still non-compliant with Australian standards. This is the third, fourth time that the applicant's had a chance to get this right and still can't do so. So since it suggests that it's a poor design and we're squeezing too many cars down there to try to get the right number of magic numbers of car parking spaces the council would seek to provide. There's a comment in the applicant's made response to the application about the two-hour parking, now being able to provide additional parking for the patients.
Round it up, please, Mr.
Yep, so this statement's a bit ingenuous. They don't understand that the parking demand that occurs up and down Moonbee Street at the moment with that two-hour parking, with the apartment blocks that are there and people parking on street, there just isn't the on-street parking available for the patients.
Thank you.
Just a quick mention on the deliveries as well, if I could, because it relates to some of the conditions that have been applied. If the panel is mindful to approve,
you only have 3 minutes. Talk. I'm indulging you at the moment.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you. The area that they've been assigned for the loading area of 6 metres by 3 metres doesn't accommodate an ambulance, which is longer than that, and also the stretcher area. A small rigid vehicle is longer than 6 metres, so this means that any vehicle that parks there is still going to have to load onto the footpath. So patients being moved on stretchers and also materials are going to be put onto the footpath. The condition of consent, which is listed there, saying all loading must occur on site, I don't see how that can physically work. Condition 6, parking should be designed in accordance with the standards. I recommend that should be, it must comply. Should imply is a bit wishy-washy, so I'll leave it at that if you would, Chair. Open to any questions. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Sorry, I forget all the time. I'd just like to concur with Mr. Quirk and Mr. Sabolch on their comments. I won't reiterate what they've said, and also on Mr. Rudd's comments on the traffic. Sorry?
Repetition doesn't make it better.
Well, I don't want to patronise you with repetition, but only to say that I would like to reiterate that there were 119 written submissions with regards to this proposal. Two of them were in support, 117 of those were objections. It should be noted also that the letter of support from the Child Care Centre was made on behalf of the centre, not from the management committee or the parents of the children that attend that centre. 117 objections and only two letters of support indicate to the council and the planning panel that the co-location of a 26-room boarding house and an opioid substitution clinic is not in the interest of the local community. And I would just like to say that disingenuous for the preschool to say that the preschool supported the proposal, given that none of the staff nor parents had the opportunity to view or sign that letter. But, any questions?
That is so, Mr. Chair. I don't propose to address you at length about this matter because the assessment report says what it does, but importantly, particularly in response to what's just been said, the fact that this clinic's been there for 30 years isn't the foundation stone for the application, but it provides clear evidence that apart from the one matter we've just heard of today, there's been no previous concerns at all, but for one concern about the hours of operation, which was misguided anyway. So historical records show there's been no complaints at all about this clinic. It's lived happily in that community for 30-odd years. So whilst it's true to say there's no written approval, its existence has been accepted by each of the councils over a long period of time, including the court proceedings referred to in the assessment report. So every indication is that this ought to be approved. The way I'd like to approach the time we've got here is to let you know that we have our expert team here. If there are questions of concern from the panel, rather than me addressing you at random about points I might think may be important to you, if there's any questions you want to raise or concerns you have, we'd like to address those through those persons I've named in the attachment to my short summary. And other than that, there's some conditions I'd like to address. In addition to the ones I've mentioned in my written submission, there's one more condition which I'd like to address as well. So I'm in your hands as to how you want to proceed. Oh, is that right? All right. It was written some time ago. It was written for the December meeting, so it's been around for a while. I have at least one spare copy here.
Condition you're referring to is a condition that says patients of the clinic are restricted from lodging in the boarding house. Did you wish to object to that?
No.
Right. Then that's 2A. 2B, you wanted that amended, is that correct? It says the operator of the clinic will confirm with the operator of the boarding house located in the same building that any prospective patients of the clinic are not to be current lodgers of the same of the boarding house. Yes.
And that refers to conditions in Part C. Part B is on page 578 of the report.
Signage. What number?
Page 578.
Yeah.
In the centre of the page, there's C, conditions that must be satisfied.
Yes.
To be.
Two, the New South Wales police conditions.
Yes.
And there's two requirements there about treatment of windows.
Just a question from me. Can you give me another example of where a boarding house and a methadone clinic coexist? So,
can you turn that speaker on, please, and
thank
speak
you.
Up?
Certainly.
So you can't think of another one where there's coexistence between the boarding house and the methadone clinic?
No.
So in relation to, and we actually had that, I'll just find the condition of consent again, where you talk about, it's under condition of consent 2A and 2B, where the plan of management must be updated to include the patients of the clinic are restricted from lodging in the
what
boarding house. So it's page 256, conditions of consent 2A, and then 2B is also aligned to it.
In Part A.
In Part A, patients of the clinic are restricted from lodging in the boarding house at the boarding house located in the building, and the operator of the clinic will confirm the operator of the boarding house. So they're trying to keep them apart. Can you tell me how that's actually going to work?
By the plan of management for the boarding house is the first way it'll be regulated. and in the same way by the management of the clinic. It has a plan of management as well, so that will be enforced in that way. Each of them have to, certainly the boarding house has to have a public register available for inspection by the council to cover that, and a less formal control is, of course, if people see someone in the boarding house and entering into the clinic, which has its separate entrance, then that would be an indicator as well. So it's easily enforced by those methods.
I know you say it's easily enforced. That is actually a strong concern of mine in relation to this, that it, because of, I can't think of, I'm like you, I can't think of another location where there is a boarding house and a methadone clinic aligned, sorry, an opioid clinic aligned. And that is obviously a concern from my perspective, and obviously it's come through in the community submissions that have been put forward as well. So that's why I was wondering how you're actually going to do it. Obviously the plans management, I completely understand that, is your way of trying to manage that. Okay, that's fine. Sorry, Marilyn, did you have something?
Mr. Fraser, is the owners of the boarding house and the owners of the methadone clinic the same people?
No, they're not. They're completely
separate.
Because
there's a plan of management already for the boarding house, is there not?
There would be one approved, yes. Yes.
Probably doesn't have anything about this methadone clinic in it at the present time.
The methadone clinic was specifically excluded from the boarding house approval.
If there was a concern, I mean, I have looked at the plan of management for the boarding house, but we would accept a condition of this consent, if given, that the plan of management of the boarding house also contain a provision to that effect.
Doesn't help us very much.
And I'm also being told that there's already been a revised plan of management submitted to the council for the boarding house, which does just that.
We can
see that.
Well, it's.
Yes, Mrs. Taylor.
Mr. Fraser, I also see that the council proposes a condition that the clinic's management will endeavour to stop people from arriving at the site before 10 minutes before the clinic opens. How are you going to manage that?
It's going to be done by, if someone does come early, they'll be advised they mustn't do that in the future.
Yes, but how can you stop them doing it?
We put limitations on their treatment.
Sorry.
I'm sorry, who are you?
Well, Mr. Fraser has the floor. If you want to take some instructions from somebody, Mr. Fraser, please do so before answering. Any instructions? We can delete those defective words in 2A.
There's a number of points that are made to answer the concern that you've expressed. The first is that there's a three strikes on your out policy in relation to persons who come out of hours or otherwise disobey the requirements of attending the clinic. That's been in place for some period of time and is effective. The clinic chooses its clients, so the three strikes on your out policy reflects that. A client can be refused service and therefore can be controlled in that way. And then the third thing we want to say is that the actual development that's been approved, that is the residential development, is merely single room apartments. It's not necessarily a boarding house as such. And it'll be charging commercial rent, which we anticipate that the clients of the clinic would find prohibitive. That's not a particularly persuasive point because we can't make that out certainly, but that's the general circumstance. So there'll be a clear separation between the two.
I understand that when a panel went out on a previous occasion, there were patients hanging around outside the building. So how have you managed that in the past?
Excuse me for a moment, I get an answer to that question. The existing clinic has a 5-minute no loitering policy. That is, no one's allowed to stay around the clinic for longer than 5 minutes. That's enforced by the clinic and in need with the assistance of the New South Wales Police.
How was it enforced?
By the clients being told to move on.
And do they move on?
Generally, yes, I'm told. And if not, the police's assistance is obtained for that to be done. And you'll note that the police are supporting this application and have no record of any particular problems which would mean they would not support the application. So in terms of objective evidence of that being successful, that therefore must be the case. No, I don't think I do, in terms of expertise.
I can, in terms of current use of 2-hour limits on parking. We currently don't have a problem with people parking.
How do you know? What do you mean parking?
Because they else. Have to move on.
You're asking me to address the question of the ambulance space or something else? I'm not able to address that directly with any expertise, but the parking arrangements have been found satisfactory by the council's assessment, and there's been submissions looked at by the council, and we rely upon the council assessment for that. No directly on-site parking arrangements, that's right. But there's a 2-hour restriction on the street, we've heard nothing in terms of existing operations or anticipated future operations in terms of the assessment by the council officers that they anticipate a problem with that.
And can you tell me, please, how long does a patient stay when they come to get their measure?
I'll get an answer to that question for you. So for a redosing consultation, 5 to 10 minutes, and for a doctor consultation, up to 20 minutes. In terms, just going back to the ambulance question, I've got a note here that's been given to me which I think might assist you, that an ambulance has not been required for many years, and that reminds me that you've got a report there from New South Wales Department of Health supporting this, reflecting upon how well run the clinic is, that even though there's the grandfathering provision that was mentioned by a concerned resident, that nonetheless they support this clinic being renewed in modern premises where it's been for a long time. I'm told that less than 50% of clients drive to their consultations. And those matters should assist you in terms of the concerns you've been expressing about those items.
Just in the unusual event that there's a problem, I'm thinking particularly early in the mornings and the clinic isn't opened at 6 o'clock, bit of a bank up, do you think that there are adequate facilities for patients to wait under shelter? I'm thinking midwinter, pitch dark, in terms of their own safety, security. What does the clinic do if there's ever a delay in opening in those early morning sessions?
Generally, staff arrive half an hour before that opening time. There's only limited clients allowed to come before the 7 a.m. starting time, and the current premises offer more coverage. The proposed premises offer more coverage than what the existing premises do in terms of winter protection.
Mr. Fraser, there was a suggestion that there be an annual community.
We aren't quite sure what that would entail, but what we would be prepared... A genuine attempt to make some sort of report, but What we would prefer to see happen, if the committee is concerned, is that apart from the informal arrangements we've had with the police and the nearby businesses and the Chamber of Commerce, that we could have a regular meeting with some community representatives on an annual basis or biannual basis as a way of having a point where the discussion can take place so that issues can be raised if there are any. And in any event, it's always available for a member of the public to come in off the street and talk to us about any problems that they have, or to go to another authority and lodge a concern. There's never been any such thing occur in the time we've been there, but rather than an annual report which anyone could write up in a way which meets the condition and does no useful purpose of the community, if that was a genuine communication issue, then we would accept a condition which required us to meet with the community once a year in some way. We don't think that's necessary, having regard to the historical operation and the existing conditions of the plan of management and the ability to accept complaints, but rather than an annual report which mightn't be worth the paper it's written on, quite frankly, I could write a report about it that did that in a perfunctory way which served no real purpose. A face-to-face meeting might be a preferable way of fulfilling that concern that's been expressed, if you thought it was worthwhile doing that. I'd actually assume that's already in the requirements of the plan of management, but maybe it's not. But if it's not, we'd certainly accept that as a way of dealing with that particular concern as well. And I think that would be the more appropriate way to proceed with respect.
Mr. Fraser, I think perhaps when residents talked about a report, they were thinking about people speaking to them rather than writing something. And in other sorts of uses where there has been community concern, the idea that they might be invited in to have a chat once a year, twice a year, would be found to be a good idea. Surely that kind of a meeting would be something that your principals could consider?
I've already indicated that we would accede to such an arrangement.
Thank you.
You could have either or both that and the complaints register, which I would assume would have been part of the plan of management anyway, frankly. So I just assumed that was there.
Easy.
Roger McEwen.
Roger McEwen, and you live near the...
I live in Moonbury Street.
Right.
Since 1978.
The panel won't be answering any questions, so I can do that now.
Okay, so I just... No, but did you read the letter that I handed to you at the site hearing?
There was no one on site when we were here today.
No, the previous time.
It was a different panel.
Was it?
Yeah.
So you don't have that information?
Well, I don't know whether we do or we don't. I haven't specifically seen a letter that was handed in on site, but we've got all sorts of things. We've got to get from all sorts of things.
Well, that's what I'm saying. The council has
anyway,
not... I want to say... I do want to make a point, yes. First of all, the man who just said it was happily 30 years is wrong. If you were to read my letter, it tells you the number of times our house has been broken into, one of which when my wife is at home as well.
Just tell us what your point is.
So my point is happy coexistence is completely incorrect. If you were to read my letter...
tell us your experience, please.
Okay, right, the experience is...
Assume we haven't read the letter, just tell us what you want to say.
Okay, then. First of all, we're broken into, even though our house is barred. The lady was thin enough to squeeze through the bars, and I was confronted my wife. She had all the knives laid out in front of her. She took my wife's Filofax and money and then crawled back through the window when my wife realised that she shouldn't be there, and we went to phone the police. That was the first experience we had. Second one, we were overseas and we were broken into again, whether it was the drug clinic or not, we can't say. Third experience, side door, I have a servant's quarters entrance, and then two other times in the flat out the back, which is an old dentist surgery, and several attempts, some of which I've discovered myself. As a school teacher, I would come home. Sometimes I'd come home early and they'd be sitting on our side doorstep. I had to weld the front tap shut to stop them from taking water there. I cut the hose up and left it for them because they were cutting my hose up for bongs. So that's how... They're cutting my hose up for bongs, so I cut a few pieces up and left them on the front doorstep. Okay, so to say it's a happy experience is baloney. It's just been havoc, and you'll find that nearly everybody in the street has been robbed, probably by the drug clinic users, and people have been putting bars on their windows and have added security, so they're basically accepting the profit that is being made by this institution. It is at the resident's expense. Thank you. And the only survey the council has ever done happened last week when they asked for submissions as to how to improve the inner west community's important livability in your area survey, the first time. Thank you.
Yes, Mrs. Darling has some further questions for you, Mr.
Mr. Fraser. I didn't know whether you had finished with your submission to us.
Yes, I had. I was allowing it to develop by way of questions rather than me throwing random thoughts at you. So I'm happy to answer any questions.
Just going to ask you to keep your voice up. It's very hard to hear here.
Okay. Thank you.
Secondly, we've heard now from Mr. McEwen, who says that the neighbours have put up with a lot over the years, and you're saying that your organisation didn't know about that. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. First thing is, the police report you've got notes that Summer Hill has one of the lowest crime rates in New South Wales, in the lowest percentile, I think the words are in the report. These are just break-ins that have not been connected to the clinic at all. As the gentleman just said, he's been robbed probably by clients of the clinic. My client has never received a complaint that your patients are causing break-ins in the street. That's never been raised with the police. These, therefore, must be break-ins of a general nature consistent with the crime rate in Summer Hill as the police report refers to. It's utterly new information to my client that there's an allegation that in this street their clients are causing break-ins. In fact, amongst the methadone users, that community is well aware of the reputation that people who have drug problems have. They're well aware that if they break into places nearby where they get treatment, their convenient treatment place might close down. So there's a counter-operating circumstance which operates in their minds. But there is no evidence other than the allegation that, yes, I've been broken into, and it is probably from the clinic. That does not provide a reason for a concern. That's not a...
Mary Lynn, I just would like...
Just a minute, please. I'm talking to Mr. Fraser.
I think it's important here to clarify a point that is in the report on page 561. Whilst the New South Wales Police clearly indicate that Summer Hill Ward is significantly lower in the state average regarding incidents of drug offences, etc., it is a council. It's a search of council's records over the past 5 years, where there is only one recorded complaint. It should be noted, I think, that members of the public would not ordinarily report any break-ins to council. They would report that to the New South Wales Police. And the report is saying two separate things, and I think we should be very mindful of relying on one recorded complaint, that is to the council, not to the New South Wales Police.
Mr. Fraser, what I'm wondering about is how do your people know they're inside the facility running it? What's happening on the street? Do you have security on the outside? I understand some methadone clinics do have that. And how do you know that your people are moving off out of the area? Do you merely rely on complaints from neighbours?
No. So, yes, excuse me a moment, please.
It'd be a lot easier if we got the people who are doing this to talk to us rather than Mr. Fraser, who doesn't know.
Yes, I know. Probably more likely to get a...
There's three points to make about that. Firstly, there's CCTV coverage from the existing premises and required by the conditions of the proposed consent.
Is it presently there? Is there CCTV presently there?
Yes, there is, but the building is coming down, as noted, of course.
I understand that, but we're talking about the past. So have you had CCTV in the past?
I believe so.
Is that correct? Did somebody tell us?
Yes. There's surveillance of the street from the premises, and thirdly, there's random street walkabouts by members of staff around the nearby suburb to check that patients are moving off and going to their either cars or to public transport.
Call them random patrols, would you? How often are they taking place?
Twice a day.
Yeah.
And that's what's happening at the present time?
Yes.
So somebody's sitting in front of the CCTV camera doing the monitoring?
I don't know.
Yes.
Oh, is that right? Yes, I'm told yes.
It's closed at the moment.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Anything further? Nothing further? Mary Ann, do you want a break? Or?
Oh, I don't need a break, but I don't need any more questions.
No, all right, okay.
Would you ask him if he wants to ask you, tell us anything further?
Yes, all right. So, Mr. Fraser, I'll give you an opportunity having regard to the peppering that's been moved in your direction as to whether there are any points that remain that you need to deal with, or whether you think that you've represented what your client wants to say so that the panel can make a decision.
Can I ask the panel if I could allow one of my experts, Dr. Tim Smythe, who's a former Director General of the New South Ministry of Health, Deputy Director, thank you, and has worked in clinical management and senior executive roles in hospitals, etc., for some period, to address some questions that have been raised with his expertise rather than me re-relating what he would otherwise say. What it relates to is... It'll be very short, thank you, Mr. Chair. Correct. Dr. Tim Smythe, SMYTH.
Thank you. I now undertake a consulting business and provide consulting services to a range of public and private sector health services, and I was Deputy Director General of the New South Wales Ministry of Health until the end of 2011, and I've worked for over 30 years in the New South Wales public sector health system in a variety of executive roles. Director of Medical Services is that I've been assisting the client with a temporary relocation of the clinic pending the building work, and I've also been liaising with the New South Wales Ministry of Health in relation to the regulatory requirements.
Have you been here while Mr. Fraser was dealing with various questions?
I have been, yes.
You have been asked by him to respond to some of those issues, positions.
Yeah, it is.
Yes, indeed.
Thank you, and I will be brief. The first point,
absolutely.
The first point I want to make is there is a very strong public accountability framework for methadone clinics, both public and private. And this clinic has been continually accredited by the New South Wales Ministry of Health ever since the introduction of the accreditation standards, and there has never been an issue or concern raised by New South Wales Health, and I've confirmed that with New South Wales Health, about the operation of the clinic. The second point I'd want to make is that based on my own knowledge as an executive officer in health services that have run public sector methadone clinics, and in my consulting work, I've also done some work with another private methadone clinic in Western Sydney, which is also located in a residential area, is that it is quite clear that clients of a methadone clinic have a lower crime rate than persons with a drug problem who are not on a clinical treatment program, and they are, if I could use the term, very protective of their clinic because they know they need the clinic and they go out of their way to make sure that they don't create problems for their clinic. The third point is that this clinic, the United Gardens Clinic in Summerhill, and the other clinics that I've been involved in, they do take seriously their responsibility to make sure that the clients know the operating hours, they know when they're meant to get there, they know when they're not meant to get there, they know when they're not meant to stay there, and they know, particularly with a private clinic, has the additional power to say, well, sorry, we're going to refer you to a public clinic now because you're not complying with the rules. Public clinics have those rules as well, but it's a bit harder for the public clinics to enforce them. A private clinic actually has that additional advantage to do it. In terms of calling an ambulance, that is a very rare event, and I cannot recall an incident at all in my 30 years of running health services in New South Wales where an ambulance has had to be called to a methadone clinic. And the final point I would make is that the regulatory requirements cover issues such as maintaining complaints registers, it covers issues of security, it covers issues of surveillance, it covers issues of liaison with the police, and so I believe the accreditation standards provide the core accountability framework the council would be looking for and the community.
Taylor's got a question for you, Dr. Smythe.
Dr. Smythe, you seem to be an expert in this area. We've got a lot of people here complaining about this facility, which has been here for a long time.
Yes.
So they have had experience of this particular facility. What advice have you given or do you give to your client as to how to deal with the residents in this area who are having difficulties with this particular facility?
First of all, to recognise that there will be concerns of community and particularly community where a clinic's located in a residential area. I live in Enmore. I walk past the Garden Clinic in Enmore Road probably two or three times a week. And so I can empathise and understand those concerns. Some of the concerns are based on an understandable misconceptions, the assumption that a client of a methadone clinic is a criminal. That is a perception. It is not fact. And talking to the Bureau... Well, I think there's suggested additional condition of consent about representative community consultation meeting perhaps once or twice a year, I think would be an excellent suggestion.
Often in these sort of uses, a consultative group with the local residents is set up so that there is an ongoing dialogue. Would that not be something that would need perhaps a little more often than once a year and might take into account the concerns of the residents?
It might possibly, but I think it would be important to have an appropriate representation of groups, including businesses, other persons in the area, and importantly, New South Wales Police. Sorry, and I'd also add probably the Sydney Local Health District, which is a public sector health service covering this part of Sydney. No, but 10 or 12 people, including someone from the local police command, someone from the Sydney Local Health District, someone from the Chamber of Commerce, and that still leaves six or seven for community represented. I agree with you, a town hall meeting of 30 is not going to be productive. Quite agree. Thank you.
A 33% reduction, Chair. 33%. Percent. Well, if you wish, I can remove myself. Susan Yule. There'll be myself. And Susan Yule, one of the owners and residents of 65.
Thank you. And then we will then hear from the owner. All right then. Well, perhaps we hear from Susan Yule first. And
do you mind if I go first?
No, I don't mind if you go first.
Thank you.
For personal reasons?
No.
All right.
Thank you.
You've got the floor, Mr. Moody. 3 minutes starts now.
Tony Moody, consultant planner. I speak in support of concerns of number 65 to the east. Can I just say, I think council officers completely got it right in respect of no unreasonable view loss to my client's property, much to the chagrin of one of my clients. I also think they got it right in terms of overshadowing. We're not asking for refusal. We're asking for the imposition of conditions. The first one is the imposition of the condition 1A, as recommended by council officers. In other words, the corner be set back. This is a two-storey structure, Chair and panel members, at a zero setback immediately adjacent to the primary private open space of my clients. The applicant claims there's no negative impacts. The applicant claims this area is subservient to my client's house. I've been in my client's house. I think it's a primary private open space area of my client's. It has a northern orientation and it's directly linked to the living room. To speak of it as subservient is, I think, a contradiction to the reality. It is the primary area. I urge the panel members to impose condition 1A. In fact, if it was my recommendation, I'd ask for the setback 1.9 metres as required under the DCP. But be that as it may, reluctantly, my clients and also myself would ask that you put that condition on. There's a claim of illegality of the deck. Quite frankly, I have a building certificate issued just before purchase. And secondly...
Sorry, just going back to yes. The condition that you referring to, did you say 1A?
Yes. Deferred commencement, my apologies.
Yeah, setback, minimum 1.4 meters.
14. It doesn't involve, can I just say, it doesn't involve a great reduction in the floor space, very minor. I'd ask for a side setback. The DCP control says 1.9. This is right on the boundary, right next to my client's private open space. There's a claim by the applicant that my client's deck is illegal. I have a building certificate, plus a photograph at the time my client's purchased. There's no justification for that. Even if it wasn't there, it's still my client's primary private open space area. The other two conditions I ask for, request, is plan A, there's a raised terrace at the back next to the barbecue. We just want a screen.
Sorry, I just want to be clear. Which DA reference in the plan are you referring to?
Oh, I'm sorry, DA 10. There's a rear terrace which is raised above natural ground level. We just want a screen along that edge, 1.6. The next issue is there's a glass roof that runs. Oh, my apologies. DAO, my eyesight. DAO 6. My client's bedroom, one of their clients' bedroom, will look directly into. In fact, My clients have a concern about looking back up at the bedroom, but I think there's going to be more overlooking from my client's property, so we want obscure glazing. The other issue of concern is heritage. I'm not a heritage consultant. Graham Brooks, who's an eminent heritage consultant, raises significant concerns. But Susan Newell will be speaking on just on the matter of what the recommendation of the council officers were before, the heritage officers, originally on this matter. We're not asking for refusal, panel members. We're just asking for the imposition of the conditions recommended by council officers and the two additional conditions contained in my email. Thank you very much.
No questions from me.
Sorry?
No questions.
Thank you, Chair and panel members.
My name's Susan Newell. I'm the owner and resident of 65 Ballast Point. My name's Susan Newell, and I'm an owner and resident of 65 Ballast Point Road. We've got several issues we'll just talk about quickly. The setback of the northern eastern corner that Tony Moody has referred to the attachment of the supplementary report, which is 14 metres from the rear boundary of 67 and the east boundary of 2 metres from the east boundary of 67. The rear deck, where our outside dining table is located, is an important and highly used part of our private open space, where we spend our time sitting, eating, relaxing, reading, and it's an area where we get the northern sun, so it's a particularly nice area of our open space. Any two-storey addition on the boundary adjacent to it would have a substantial impact on our amenity. Secondly, is the issue of the glass link. As again, Tony, we've got great concerns about the people looking up into our daughter's room and also our daughter looking down. It's actually a passageway between the bedrooms, the main passageway between the bedrooms and bathrooms. And so I imagine there'll be people in various states of dress walking through, and I don't think it's appropriate for a young teenage girl. Yep. Okay. The private open. We're also concerned about the privacy overlooking from the balcony into the rear open space. The proposed first floor deck will look into our private open space, and there should be a privacy screen on the eastern side of the 1.6 metres in height, and the metre returns on the northern balcony recommended by council as for the deferred commencement condition 1C should be at least 1.6 metres high to prevent overlooking. And we also request that the blade wall not be permitted as recommended by the council, because that will be just a substitution of another wall at 6 metres imposing over our deck and private open space. Are you...
Sorry, can you just repeat that last sentence for me? We were just checking, because you said 1C, you were making that a 1.6 privacy
so
screens on the eastern and western sides of the first floor balcony to have a 1 metre return to the north side of the balcony. You're suggesting that be a 1.6. Is that what you're suggesting under 1C?
So 1.6 metres high?
Yes.
And
there's a condition 6 that says all privacy screens must be 1.6.
Okay, that's fine.
And that's only the return.
I think it just needs to be clarified.
Okay.
So is that,
you understand that.
So that's,
yeah, that's
we're clear in relation
yeah. But,
to that.
But we also do have concern, actually, which Tony Moody didn't, about the blade wall, which also council has recommended should not be allowed, because that will be just another substitution of a wall, and it'll be 6 metres in height imposing over the deck and the private open space. So there's a blade wall that the...
That's not a big deal to change that.
Yes, indeed, further.
We have obtained a heritage report from Mr. Graham Brooks, who is unable to make it today as he's giving evidence in court, and he's actually in total agreement with the main heritage report by two of Council's heritage consultants of the 3rd of July 2018. Council's heritage officers stated that the application does not comply with relevant heritage controls. And Damien, my husband, was going to, but we've compressed it all. in this report marked the 3rd of July 2018, Council's report, they actually state here the recommendations. The proposal is generally unacceptable as it does not comply with relevant heritage and heritage controls and guidelines. It does not conserve the heritage of Leichhardt, clause 5.1 of the Leichhardt LEP, and amended drawings must address all of the concerns below. And well, we would like that any new addition must have a traditional hipped roof and that the public domain is a single-storey addition. So because at the moment it's actually got substantial impact from the street view. It's actually what the main addition is wider than the actual old heritage cottage. So, and there's oblique views, and so it actually makes a substantial impact from the street view. So we believe it should actually...
Can you put the mic on, please?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Clearly, we're here to support the recommendation of approval. This matter has been before the previous panel. It was deferred on heritage issues and for us to make a submission on some of the conditions. I'm not going to touch too much on the heritage issues, being not a heritage person, but suffice to say that Council has reviewed the heritage information and they're satisfied with it. We do have a heritage person here should the panel have any heritage questions. I just want to touch base on some of the conditions which was part of the deferral. We're somewhat disappointed that in our letter of the 12th of December, which formed part of the package as part of the deferral, we actually referenced some conditions we would like to be amended. The report actually doesn't address those conditions, so it somewhat doesn't address the deferral. So I do want to go through those conditions in question. And Mr. Chair, that's why I may go over the three minute period. And if that means I need to take up one of the other speakers' time, so be it. Unless they give authority to do so. If you look at the actual plan in terms of the first... Okay. If you look on the first floor plan, the DA number would be, it's drawing number DA06. You'll actually see there's three windows which we've actually said that we don't believe need to be opaque. They are windows F3, F4 and F6. Those windows actually face the rear elevation and we don't believe they need to be opaque. The important thing to also note, and it comes to the issue of the side setback, this development is actually well compliant with Council's BLZ control. You can see the dotted line which runs parallel to the street, and you can see how the built form is actually well behind the BLZ. In the original application, we did have blade walls to prevent any side view overlooking, which was the concern of the council officers. We just believe if those blade walls were retained, there wouldn't be a need to therefore treat those windows because the view is directly to the rear, noting that there is privacy screens on both sides of the back of that balcony. So therefore, all orientation and view outlook is directly to the rear. That raises the issue in terms of the condition 1A, in terms of the north-eastern corner. Our view and our position is, and it's somewhat reinforced by the fact that we are compliant with the BLZ, is that there is no amenity impact, as the actual objectives planner has said, from a shadowing point of view. There is no privacy impact. If you look at the location of the window of the sliding doors of that living area, we have consciously located the rear alignment to be at the starting point of that fenestration. Therefore, there's no visual bulk and scale in our submission which would impact on the amenity of that dwelling. The general outlook of that dwelling is, again, towards the rear, which is all pretty much common. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. So in terms of, therefore, from an amenity point of view, we don't see that the bulk and scale issues are going to cause any impact to that property. It's compliant with FSR, it's compliant with landscaping, and therefore from a bulk and scale point of view, we deem it as being more than acceptable. It's very common to allow zero setbacks in the area. It's evident when you would have done your inspection, there's multiple examples of zero setbacks. This is no different, and Council has varied the control, and actually the DCP in its own right allows variations to those setbacks, providing that amenity issues have been addressed. And our submission is they have been addressed in this instance, and that's why it is acceptable. And the building to 65, it is for the now building. So from an amenity point of view, we don't agree that there is going to be an impact from a bulk and scale point of view. No worries.
Can you just explain for me? I'm just looking at DA06 drawing. And you were discussing in relation to removing the glazing in relation to F3, F4, F6.
Yeah.
Just talk me through in terms of F3, why you've decided that, given that the blades are being removed on that one as well, I note, on that particular drawing.
No, our suggestion would be to actually put the blades back in.
Right.
So we originally had the blades on the two sides,
yeah,
and the council officers wanted us to remove them. Our view is, as you can see on that plan, we're well behind the BLZ, which we would otherwise be allowed. And so we're saying it's not breaching any controls. And what it does from an amenity point of view, it just provides a better outlook. The concern the council had was not the view directly to the back, because we had sufficient setback. Their concern was cross view. So the theory is the blade will stop the cross view.
So, no, I don't have a plan with the blades in it. I have the plans.
The original plans did actually have the blades, and my suggestion would be to the panel was that to actually impose a condition to reinstate those blades back into the design,
yeah,
and to
remove. We might look at.
Would anybody have a copy of the plan with the blades shown? Council, or you, Mr. Teresi?
Yeah, except if we reinstate it through a plan that we haven't got. Not here. Very difficult to reinstate it with a plan we haven't got before us, Mr. Teresi.
The application is for deferred commencement on those aspects, so I don't see the reason why you could not impose such a condition under that pretense. Because it's deferred commencement. We have a picture on a phone of that assist being the plans.
No, that
won't.
Would it? You want to see it on the phone?
It's a plan. It's a plan. Hey,
yes,
what do we see?
Mrs. Taylor would love to see it on the phone.
Here we are. It's easy to see. There and there.
The rest of this plan that we're adopting,
well, that's
is identical, is it?
And the neighbour doesn't want that.
No. Yeah. So you don't have it on one side?
That's right.
Sorry, you provided this drawing, which is DA06, and it's actually dated the 27th of March,
yes.
1-8. And you've heard the point made in relation to the blades. Do you have a view in relation to that before we continue on with you? Okay, so we might get you back. Okay.
And that's the blade that Ms. Yule spoke about?
Yes.
Yes, thank
yes.
you.
Yes, thank you.
It would be approximately, I'm just trying to find the drawing number myself. It would be approximately the same, I would say.
Slightly lower.
It's slightly lower. According to the architect, it's slightly lower. It's not higher, no. And
on the plans, I believe, shown right next to the number 65 is
It could, but the suggestion of a screen by Mr. Moody would be acceptable on that deck as well. We wouldn't have any objection to that screen, which would therefore mean that barbecue could stay then achieve the same outcome. Yeah, and that would resolve that privacy concern. Excuse me, Mr. Chair. Well, yeah, but the plans don't show the screen, so there would need to be a condition to acknowledge the screen in that location. But those conditions relate